Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, happy Monday, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. It's March 25th, 2013, episode something 689, I don't know, 1,427, who knows? I can't keep up anymore. It's too many numbers for me to read at the beginning now. This episode is brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, Horse World.
It's Monday.
Monday is my favorite time of year.
This is Horses in the Morning with your lovable hosts, Jamie Jennings.
I am the queen. You listen to me.
I'm sorry that people are so jealous of me, but I can't help it that I'm popular.
Glenn the Geek.
You look especially radiant today, Your Grace.
I'm going to do a terrific show today because I'm good enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Happy Monday.
And it is Monday, and that is why, yeah, I don't know, being pregnant on a Monday morning when you have to get up at 4:45, you're just stupid. Like, it's like nothing I can do right this morning. I've got dogs outside barking. I'm trying not to wake up my husband. I think my pants are on backwards. I don't know. I can't do all this.
And you know, with pregnant pants, it really doesn't matter, though, right? Oh. They're on backwards or forwards.
They're got elastic around them no matter what.
But, you know, it is Monday morning. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We appreciate you joining us this week on Horses in the Morning. We have a lot to talk about this week, a lot going on, and we're going to chat a little bit later in the show about our weekend over at Live Oak International. We had some excitement there yesterday, Jamie, we'll have to tell you about. If anybody was watching it on the USEF network, they'll know. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. Yeah, it was fun. We had a good time. And then some other things. What is coming up on today's show, Jennifer?
On today's Omega Alpha Monday edition, we open with a lovely melange of weekend misadventures and horsey headlines. And then we follow it up with a final installment of our leg protection series. And we round out the day with Wiley, the voice of Horse Nation, here with the most up-to-date laugh tracks from last week.
Very good. Thank you, Jennifer. Well, my Daily Whinny goes, I was looking for a nice story this morning to give my Daily Whinny to, and my Daily Whinny goes to Zoe. Zoe's a miniature horse that is an assistance horse for a four-year-old special needs child in the Anchorage Public Elementary School up there in Alaska. And apparently it's the first miniature horse being used as an assistance horse. This child has something called AT, which I'm not even going to try and tackle. And I doubt Jamie's going to try and tackle that even this morning either. But it's a genetic disorder that progressively robs children of their ability to coordinate movement, such as walking, so that they and this child's mother is a horse trainer. So she found that that using the miniature horse really helped the child walk and get around. So that is really cool that they're allowed to use them as service animals now, and that they're actually starting to use them. So that's the first one in Alaska being used in the classroom. And there's a little picture of the little black miniature horse with his little saddle on him. He's cute. Zoe.
It's adorable. I mean, my gosh. So this pony gets to come, miniature horse, gets to come into the classroom and stay all day or just part of the day?
I guess he gets to hang out all day. No, I guess he gets to hang out in the classroom all day. Now, my question is, this one doesn't appear in the picture to have a diaper on, and I don't know, is he house trained? That's the first thing I thought of.
Well, of course, that's the problem. I was going to say it begs the question, where's he poop? I mean, yeah, I he's inside all day, but they must have a trained, I guess. That's so cool. Well, yeah, it's fantastic. Cool to have a mom that's a horse trainer that can do all that.
You know what? We need to find somebody that has trained service miniature horses to find out little things like that us horse people want to know. Like, what about the whole pooping thing and peeing?
Yeah.
Thing?
Yeah.
Things we want to know.
Well, I talked about on Friday the fact that I was going to a baby shower, and it was somebody else's baby shower, and it was a friend of mine who's 10 years younger than me, bless her little heart. She's 25 years old, and she's pregnant with her first baby, and so I went to the baby shower, and I realized that everybody was 10 years younger than me, and everybody was pregnant. And apparently they took a photo of me and unbeknownst to me posted it on my Facebook page. So Glenn goes, wow, you look really cute pregnant in your pink dress. I'm like, what are you talking about? So, yeah, there's a new photo posted of me pregnant on my Facebook page, which I did not approve. And I will leave up for about 20 minutes before I delete it. But point is, everybody was like, so is it your first? I'm like, yes, it's my first. And I'm like, this, I'm good. This is the only one. Oh. Well, I refuse to have an only child. Oh, my gosh, you're going to have an only child. What is the deal with only children? Why can people just not just have one baby?
Yeah, this is not going to be an only child. This child is going to have about 55 horses, 12 dogs, and 65 cats to keep them company. Oh, and the chickens and the what are those little rat things you have? Those two. Yeah, the guinea pigs.
Those things.
This child is not going to be alone.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a little unbelievable. But when you're sitting at a baby shower, and you're one of the, I don't know, 15 pregnant women that are there, I mean, seriously, it was crazy. And then I realized, I'm like, oh, my God, everybody's pregnant. Oh, my God, everybody is 10 years younger than me.
How's it feel to be the oldest one in the group?
It hurt. It hurt a little bit, but I'm not going to lie. I was thinking to myself, well, I waited until I was 30 to meet the man of my dreams. I took my time. All y'all are too young. You missed out. Unlike, I'm just kidding. I didn't say any of that. But that
not only did you wait
until
you were 30 to meet the man of your dreams, during that 20 to 30 period, you were a DJ in Atlanta. So you got to have a good time.
I lived well. I'm not going to lie. So it worked out, but it was just interesting to see. I don't know, it's had a different generation. I don't know, but you know what? Good for me. That's all I'm gonna say.
Well, the Wheel of Trivia will be back on Wednesday, so join us then. Don't forget about that first thing in the show on Wednesday, 9:05 a.m. And what else do we have to cover? That's about it as far as housekeeping stuff.
Really bad ads. Start getting them in.
Yeah, bad ads. That's right, for Friday. Send them over to Jennifer@HorseRadioNetwork.com. And we do still have those Troxell helmets on the Wheel of Trivia this week, along with a bunch of other good stuff. So be sure to give us a call then. And remember, you can play over and over again. If you won before, you can win again. And we did have a winner. I wanted to mention that post on Facebook this morning. And I'm trying to see who it was. Judy Shepherd posted on there. My Wheel of Trivia prize arrived Saturday, and the breeches are amazing. She's the one that won the Troxell breeches, worth $100 and some. And she says,
not
thank
Troxell breeches.
I'm sorry, Carrots breeches. thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity to play and win. So thank you for posting that. We appreciate knowing when people get their stuff. We really like pictures of people with their stuff. Just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously.
We went to Live Oak over the weekend, Live Oak International. I posted a couple of videos on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. Just search for Horses in the Morning on Facebook. One of them was a couple of them from the marathon on Saturday. Now, we went over. I actually watched with Jennifer. We sat through 3 dressage tests on Friday. I'll have you know.
Whoa. Hold on.
I know.
You sat through 3 whole dressage tests?
And that was it. I was out of there. Jennifer. Even the drivers that are there are going, oh, dressage is boring. You know, it's the same as the eventers. You know, they look forward to one thing, and that's getting to Saturday for the marathon. And it's the same with the eventers, you know. You guys are always looking forward to cross country.
The four-in-hands are kind of cool to watch.
Yeah, they were kind of
in
fun.
Dressage. Because I can't manage to keep the bend correct on one horse, much less four.
Four, yeah. That is,
that's pretty cool to watch.
I think it's amazing that a judge can sit outside the arena and notice the bend on four horses. That's the real talent, is the judge in that whole thing.
Yep. So we did have a good time. The grounds are beautiful. It's the first time we were ever in Live Oak, in the grounds themselves. And, Jamie, they have the biggest live oak trees I've ever seen in my life. There was one that had to be, Jennifer, what, 8 feet across?
Yeah, between 6 and 8 feet in diameter, yeah.
In diameter. And this thing had about 1 million branches coming out of it. And the tree was so large, and the branches were so long and large, they actually hung down to the ground and were digging into the ground. It was the biggest tree I've ever seen in my life. And they had a whole line of these things. And being under them with the Spanish moss and everything was really cool. There were some really cool spots over there at Live Oak. And they probably have the nicest grass and the nicest turf in all of Florida. It was just beautiful. I mean, and this time of year,
like golf course kind of turf?
The arena looked like a golf course. The arena was golf course grass. It was like a carpet. No, it was beautiful. Jennifer, it had to be one of the nicest grass you've ever seen in an arena, right? It was beautiful.
Oh, gosh, yes. It really was golf course quality. The grass, blades of grass were so fine, they were like hair. Amazing. I just wanted to lay down and it was raining.
But then, then you have this arena full of this perfect grass, and then they're going to bring four in hands and carts.
Oh, not only that, they were doing a jumping show. They were doing jumping shows on it, too. So, yes, they were shredding it pretty much.
Oh, wow.
But every year, they redo it and get it back to perfect again. And what is really cool, I did post some pictures on our driving radio show page. At the end of the arena, this beautiful arena, and, of course, it has all the flags of the 20 countries that are represented, all that stuff, and it's just beautiful. At the end of the arena, they had four of the largest palm trees I've ever seen that were perfectly placed, two on either side of the entrance of the arena. So they had the Live Oak band, sign over the top in between these perfectly placed palm trees, and that's where you got to see the rigs come up out of. It was spectacular. And Wendy said, when you're sitting in a rig and you come up over this little bit of a hill through that entrance of the palm trees into the arena, she said it's a feeling that you don't get anywhere else. Because they really were the tallest palm trees I've ever seen. I don't know if he brought those in.
High. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he had to bring them in because they wouldn't have been growing perfectly like that. So I don't know where you find palm trees that big and how you plant them. I have no idea. They were huge. But then, Saturday we went to Marathon Day, and I posted some pictures of that. Marathon Day is always fun, and this grounds is set up perfectly because you can really walk a very short distance and see all of the obstacles. And you know how it is at some of these shows with cross country with eventing, you'll walk for miles or you only get to see one. You know, you'll stand in one spot, you only see one, and then you have to walk to see a next one. This one, you can see almost all of them from one spot. So they really have it set up for spectators.
And that seems to be the trend, actually, in a lot of the new eventing facilities where you can stand in one place and see a whole bunch. But I've been watching the videos of Chester Weber doing the water hazard, I guess.
Yes.
And
yep.
I don't get it. Like, it looks like they just, like, turn a circle, go in the water, turn another circle, go in the water again, go through the bridge. I mean, so is this a very, I'm sorry for my ignorance on this, is this a very choreographed
thing that they're doing? There are five gates there, you know, A, B, C, D, and they have to go through them. Just like you have to put right on red or, you know, red on right when you're going through your gates or your jumps, they have to do the same thing. So there's actually five of them in each of these obstacles. So that's why you see them weaving in and out of the obstacles. They're trying to hit all those gates.
Yeah, but there's different people are doing different things.
Different. Yeah, they take different routes. Yeah, different people take different routes.
Each one is set up so that in eventing you can have jump number 17, A, B, C, and D, but there are different ways to get betwixt A, B, C, and D depending on the route you decide to take. Works the same way in driving, except that there is a lot more – options. And any given obstacle with four or five gates, there are probably 10 different ways to get it done. And so it's really hard. We sat and watched that same water obstacle for probably 6 or 7 drivers. I don't think any two of them did it the same. It's just crazy.
And then I was sitting on the ground. If you're watching Chester's there, you'll see it toward the end of his run there, that the horses are coming straight towards me. And I was really hoping they were going to turn, because I was sitting on the ground right in front of them.
Yeah. And the guys were like, woo. The one guy did miss his turn, Glenn.
Yeah, the next video, if you keep watching, it goes to a second video of another four-in-hand team. That was Casey Zubek. And he just about ran into the audience. He scared some people, the crap out of some people. He got 2 feet. His horses didn't make the turn, and he turned the other way. He happened to turn right towards the audience, and his horses got about 2 feet from running some tailgaters over. That's scary. Let me tell you, when you're sitting on the ground and you see those horses coming towards you, that's a scary sight, because you know you're dead. If they run over you, you're dead.
Now, here's the good part about that is you are going to make a lot of money if you get run over.
By Chester Weber's horses, especially.
Exactly. I mean, that guy owns that place. Seriously, first of all, the guy owns the place. Follow whatever he does, because he's probably had a little more experience at each obstacle. Number two, if Chester Weber hits you, you may own part of that farm.
They were very concerned about safety all weekend. I got to tell you that.
Really? Well, no kidding.
Now, so you had the singles, pairs, and the four-in-hand teams. There were 3 four-in-hand teams of horses and then 3 four-in-hand teams of ponies. And the four-in-hand teams of ponies were really cute. I got to tell you, they were really cute because 2 of the teams were all grays. And, you know, you wouldn't imagine that 2 out of the 3 teams would be all grays, but they were. And they were fun to go watch go through the obstacles and do their thing. It was a good time. We had a great time on Saturday watching all the marathon, and that was over probably around 1 o'clock, and then they started jumping. We watched a little bit of the jumping and then left. Yesterday, they finished up.
Yeah, give me the drama.
Yeah, well, that was yesterday. They finished up they finished up the weekend with cones. The thing you always wonder why they call it cones. But they set these cones. They're 2 inches. You get 2 inches on each side of the wheels of the carriage. And they set this whole course up, and you have to drive through 20 different sets of cones and not hit any of them, because there's little tennis balls on top of them, and the balls will fall off, and that'll be a penalty. So the object is to drive through the zigzaggy pattern as fast as you can go, you know, or in optimal time, rather, and not knock any of the balls off. And they have tight turns and serpentines and twisty stuff. And well, yesterday, we get there around 9 o'clock, and they were calling for heavy winds. Well, the heavy winds started around 9 o'clock, and the winds by about noontime were probably hitting 30, 40 miles an hour, which means that, and what they did differently, and I don't know why they did this, but they had another jumper class right after the cones. So they left the jumps in the arena, and they set up the cones course around the jumps. Well, now we've got 20, 30-mile-an-hour winds. What happens to jumps in 20, 30-mile-an-hour winds, Jamie?
They blow over, my friend.
While horses are in there competing.
Oh,
so
my God.
We have, and they had put pretty plants beside all the jumps. It was beautiful. All the plants are blowing over. Things are blowing everywhere. The announcer booth blew away. Yeah, the announcer had to stop at one point because his booth was blowing away. His tent was just taking off. And the timer, the electronic expensive timer, blew over and broke. It was windy. I mean, it was really, really windy. And a lot of the drivers got through, most of them got through, until about Wendy. Until Wendy came in with her driver. And her driver is a very good driver. She's a won world championships. And Wendy was on the back. She was navigating. By the way, she was navigating for a marathon with that lady, and they had some of the fastest times. What a crazy ride Wendy had. They were flying through those obstacles. But on cones day, she gets in there, she starts, it's windy, and everything's blowing around, and then the rain comes. And it poured. I mean, torrential rain with about 40-mile-an-hour winds, and they're out there trying not to knock these cones over. And Wendy is soaked. You can see them both wiping their eyes. They can't see where they're going. The horses probably couldn't see where they're going. She was driving the team. And shortly after that, they had 1 or 2 more come in. And then I saw Chester Weber over at one of the tents. And he was supposed to be warming up his four-in-hand horses. and I saw him come over to one of his tents, and he was on the phone. And then all of a sudden, he runs behind to the warm-up area and screams at all the drivers that are still out there in the warm-up area with the foreign hands and teams to get back to the tents. There's a tornado warning.
Holy cow.
And the announcer comes on and says, oh, we're stopping the show at this point. There's a, you know, there's the weather is getting worse. So basically asked everybody to leave. And it was just pouring at that point. The winds were whipping. And so Wendy told us she was on one of those carriages. And she said, it's a mile drive back to the tents. So they had a mile to go in this weather back to the tents. And she said, you should have seen it. It looked like something out of the Ben-Hur movie with the chariots. Everybody just took off. And she said they were flying down there to get back to the tents because they had heard tornado warning. And it was windy enough that you would have thought there could have been one. And they, she said, you should have seen those four-in-hand ponies just with their little legs going. She said, everybody was just flying back. She said, you couldn't see anything because the rain was in your face. And so they, in fact, did have a couple of tornadoes in Florida. One hit down towards Orlando, and there was a lot of damage in our area from the winds yesterday. So that was the wild end to life. I don't know if they ever ended up doing the jumping or anything in the afternoon. We left at that point.
It begs the question. So you've got all these people in these carts with these horses and tornado warnings. And the thing that they say to do is go back to the tent. How exactly is a tent going to help you in a tornado?
Well, not, you know, they had this, you know which tents I'm talking about too, the great big ones they put stalls in. You see it?
Get undercover. Get undercover. Yeah, something that'll just wrap you up as it takes you away. I mean,
I know.
Tornadoes take off roofs, Glenn. I mean, seriously.
But there was no safe. I mean, there was really no other place to go. There was not any solid structures of any kind. So that was about the safest place to go to. Fortunately, all I could picture was one of those big live oak trees coming down, too. It was.
I was just going to hide in the bottom of one of those sinkholes. Thank you very much.
It was wicked. It was wicked yesterday. Wow. So the foreign hands never did get to go. And what happens there is I guess they finish on their marathon scores. I guess that's probably the same way in eventing if you never get to do the stadium for weather reasons.
So who ended up winning?
So, well, there were a ton of classes, but I will mention one person who took the pairs. This was also the national championships for the pairs. And Misty Wrigley won the national championships for the pairs. And she was very excited about that, and she deserved it. She had a great team of horses, and Missy Wrigley Miller, and she ended up. She's from not too far from where we used to live over in Lexington, Kentucky, and she's part of the Wrigley family. If you recognize that name,
never heard of it.
Do they even sell? Does anybody buy Wrigley's gum anymore? Do they make it anymore?
Oh my gosh, one of my favorite people in the world, one of my good friends, is actually a bigwig over at Wrigley in Chicago, and they don't just make gum, dude. They make like lifesavers and now Mars candy. They bought Mars candy or Mars candy
okay.
Bought Wrigley. As pretty much every about 60% of the candy or gum that you would buy belongs to Wrigley. They're doing fine.
Got it.
Yeah. That chick is going to be buying some new horses soon because she can't.
She just did, which is why she won. So.
But, yeah, they're a little more imaginative than just plain old Wrigley gum. Like, I don't even know if they sell that anymore because they've got Starburst fruit flavor.
Stick gum anymore? Even stick gum, you know. I can't tell you last time we bought stick gum.
I do. I buy it all the time.
Really? You don't buy the little squares?
I buy it. Well, they have in the packets like 15 in a stick packet now instead of just the 5. They don't sell the little ones anymore.
That's what we
need.
I don't know. We got off.
Buying
things. So anyway, that's our live oak story. It was fun. You can see the videos on, and you can see the video if you watch through Chester's into the second one. You'll see the horses almost running the spectators over. But speaking of buying things, Bruce Springsteen, I guess, decided that his daughter didn't have a nice enough horse.
Well,
so,
that's really nice when your daddy goes, honey, I really want to buy you a horse, but I don't want to buy you just any horse. I want to buy you a very, very expensive horse.
By the name of Lasona, actually, is this name of this Irish-bred expensive horse, and everybody in Ireland is very excited that Bruce Springsteen showed up with his $1.3 million to buy Lasona. Yes, $1.3 million spent on Lasona, who was who show jumped under, Dara Kerins or somebody last year, and led the Irish team to Nations Cup victories and stuff. So this horse has won some stuff. By the way, Karen said it's a very hard decision to sell the horse, but I'm sure, you know, $1.3 million, I think I could part with one.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I'm sorry. When Bruce Springsteen walks up to you and says, "I'll take it," you whatever it is, you sell it to him.
Right.
Because he's Bruce Springsteen. He's the boss. That's his name. So what they're saying is that this horse could easily be a gold medal winner at the Olympics in Rio in 2016. So he didn't just buy his daughter a horse. He bought her, like, probably one of the highest rated show jumping mares there is.
And she is doing very well. She has won a bunch of stuff down in Wellington. You know, so she is a good rider. But we learned that from Totalist, didn't we? You know, you can't always transfer a terrific horse and have it be a winner for the next rider. There's no guarantees with that.
No, absolutely not. But you know what? You also can't fake your way around a show jumping course when they're 5.5 feet tall.
That's true. And let's talk about keeping the horse sound until 2016. That's the other thing. Million three. Wow. That is a lot of money spent on a horse.
Well, I got some good news coming from the police department in Kansas, the Kansas Department of Corrections, and involved in this is the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM. Of course, they're using taxpayer money, but in the next 5 years, $2 million will be given to the prison inmates in Kansas, not to the inmates themselves, but to the Kansas penal system, the correctional system, because now Kansas, just like the programs in Canyon City, Colorado, Wyoming, Carson City, Nevada, Gunnison, Utah, they do the prison-trained Mustangs. Well, now Kansas is going to start doing that as well. So they are doing the inmate training program in Hutchinson, Kansas, and they're going to use the horses that are the Mustangs. They're going to take the Mustangs out of the holding pens, take them to the inmates, and then once they're done, they're going to go to Border Patrol. How cool is that?
Oh, very good.
Yeah,
I think that's
the more Mustangs that we can help get out of those holding pens and get them into jobs, the better. So the inmates, of course, have to earn their way to being involved in the program, and it hasn't started yet. They're taking applications all the way through March 27th as far as the inmates who want to submit themselves to be in this program. So if you've seen any of those documentaries on this, have you seen any of those?
No.
They do documentaries on the prison inmates training these horses, and it is unbelievable. They have no sense of self-preservation, the horses or the inmates. So it's really good TV. I mean, you get these horses, these guys on these horses that are just trying to kill them. But by the end of it, they do a really good job, you know, and it's really impressive. So I wish everybody in Kansas the best of luck, and I'm really, really excited they're starting to do that now.
Very good. Well, why don't we talk about our sponsor, Omega Alpha, and then we'll go into part four of our Thin Line Global Leg Protection Series. This is the final part of that series that Jennifer did with Thin Line Global, with Elaine from Thin Line Global.
Well, we'd like to thank Omega Alpha for being a part of today's show. Everybody, please go to the Omega Alpha page on Facebook. They're always putting up fun stuff and also doing contests and stuff. So Omega Alpha cares about what we feed our horses, more probably than what we feed ourselves. And we do the same thing. Omega Alpha cares about what goes into your horses and ponies, and that's why they only use natural formulations for enhancing equine health and performance. All of their products are made by them using ingredients available, and dozens of different natural products are available to help your horses with all kinds of things, including their coat, digestive tract, kidney and liver function, muscles, joints, and so much more, including lungs. And I've got a horse that is starting to cough a little bit. It's really dusty out here this time of year, so I'm actually going to try the lung flush, and I'll let you know how that works. See all their products at OmegaAlphaEquine.com or like them on Facebook by searching for Omega Alpha Equine.
Hi, everybody. This is Coach Jen, host of the Horse Tip Daily Show here on the Horse Radio Network. Thanks for joining us for the conclusion of our four-part series on leg protection for your horse. In the first three installments of the series, with the expert help of Elaine Lockhead, we've covered who needs leg protection, why they need it, and the function of the many types of boots available to today's equestrians. This educational series has been produced in cooperation with Thin Line Global, and they've created a special offer just for our listeners. When you go to thinlineglobal.com and purchase any Thin Line product, be it protective boots, pads, or other accessories, type the word radio in the promo code at checkout and receive 12% off your online purchase. And now I'd like to welcome back Elaine Lockhead.
Thank you. It's lovely to be back.
In this final installment of our four-part series on leg protection, we're going to be covering fitting boots, how to take care of your boots, and the durability factor with your boots. And Elaine Lockhead from Thin Line Global is here to help me out because she seems to know everything boot, and thank goodness she does. So let's cover fit first, because unless you get a pair of boots or a set of boots that fit properly, nothing else really much matters. So what should I be looking for in a good fit?
The most important thing to look for is to make sure that that boot is not shifting around. If it's moving and it's probably too large, and if the horse boot is moving on the horse's leg, it's going to cause you a lot of problems. The horse is not going to be comfortable, and it can be dangerous if the boot actually shifts down on to the hoof area.
Oh, okay. Golly. Yeah, that would be very ugly.
It's too large.
Yeah.
We also don't want to go too small. One of the most important things whenever you're applying any kind of equine leg protection is you always pull from, if you've got a piece of elastic that closes with a Velcro, you pull the elastic around, close it down on the Velcro, and then generally there's a second Velcro that goes on top of that to secure it. The most important thing to remember is you always pull from the front where the cannon bone is to the back of the leg. You never pull against the tendon. That's when you get tendon damage.
Oh.
So you always pull from the front to the back of the leg and then secure your Velcro. So if your boot is too small and you're pulling really hard and you could just get the fastening thing and you've got a death grip on your horse's leg, he's not going to be very happy about that.
No.
So we want to just try that and make sure that the boot has a reasonable fit. It's not rocket science. You can have something like a galloping boot or a brushing boot that goes around the whole leg, and it can close on top of itself a little bit, or it can have a little bit of a gap. So it's really a pretty wide range that is a tolerable range to use. So you don't have to be really OCD about your boot size most of the time. You kind of want to get in the right neighborhood, and you'll be all right. If you just look for those things, make sure the boot's not shifting, and make sure that you're not having to pull it extremely tight to get it on.
Now,
most companies have sizing charts on their websites.
Oh, yeah.
And
so read the label, right?
You can read the label, and you can measure your horse. Some companies, it's very difficult because they will have so many different boot sizes. You know, it's not like helmets. Riding helmets, for instance, you have to have a different helmet size for every eighth of an inch because your helmet has to fit perfectly. Boots are not that way. And if you have to look at a grid with 47 sizes, you probably should stay away from that boot because that means the way it's manufactured is it has to fit exactly. There are many good boots out there that if you kind of get in the neighborhood, it fits well, it'll mold to the horse's leg, it will work perfectly. So that's kind of one thing you might want to look out for. You really don't want to feel like when you go shopping for foods that you just are inundated with stock choices. Your selective job has a couple, you know, small, medium, or large.
There you go. When you're fitting a boot on a horse, most boots nowadays, the buckles seem to be, a strap with a buckle seems to be out of vogue right now. Most boots seem to close with a Velcro. How do you deal with that little flap of Velcro that the pokey part is longer than the soft, squishy part? Would you recommend trimming them off, or do people tape them down?
I wouldn't. Well, I wouldn't cut them off because then the Velcro tends to fray.
Uh-huh.
If when you close your boot, you have, more than about a quarter of an inch up to a half an inch left over,
mm-hmm.
and what you've done is you have selected a boot that has an elastic that was too inexpensive, and the elastic pulls too much. And what happens when you pull, when you have inexpensive elastic, it is no longer elastic because it pulls out to 100% of the pull rate, and then it does nothing. You want a boot that flexes. Think about how much the horse's leg is moving. You need your boot to be able to kind of open and close a little bit as the horse is going. So if you find that you have a lot of Velcro left at the end, you've probably purchased a boot that was, I don't want to say too inexpensive, but you need to make sure that the elastic on the boot is a good, sturdy, durable elastic and not something that's thin and is just going to pull out straight and be useless.
Yeah, we've all seen that elastic that after a few uses, when the elastic is no longer under tension, it gets that kind of wobbly, it looks like an overcooked egg noodle.
Right.
That's not the elastic you want.
No.
So if my horse is getting chafe marks on his legs where his boots go, can that be caused by a too tight boot or a too loose boot or both?
It could actually be caused by both. It's most likely to be caused by a too loose boot, and then you have to take a look at the material inside. There are a lot of materials that chafe the horse's leg. Leather is actually one. We use leather so much in equine products just because that was what was available up until the last 50 years or so. So you find a lot of leather in horse products, and then people oil that leather, and then the leather is slippery, and then the oil irritates the horse's leg, and you get this whole cycle of problems going on. And other products, like some horses are allergic to or have a reaction to neoprene, and some horses have a reaction to latex, and some horses have a reaction to a lot of the products that go inside of a boot. The easiest product to use is, almost no horse has a reaction to sheepskin, but that's very difficult for a person to manage in a boot because they tend to get very dirty. But at least that would never chafe and rub. And then, of course, the thin line never chafes and rubs.
Very interesting. So check into that fit, people. So with durability, we touched on that a little bit with the gappy, overcooked egg noodle elastic. What should folks look for in their boots that's going to tell them it's time to replace the boot or have the boot repaired?
One of the things I like to do with the boot is find, if you don't have a strike plate on your boot, or if there's part of the boot that doesn't have a strike plate on it, if you'll just take your thumb and your finger and squeeze, if you can feel your own thumb and your own finger, then that means the product inside the boot has deteriorated to such a point that it's doing nothing for your horse. So when you touch a boot, if you press down on it, you should not be able to feel your own fingers on either side of the inside of that boot.
Cool. I never would have thought of that. Do you recommend, if you've got a pair of boots that, let's say, the Velcro bits have worn out? Because sometimes, especially if you have a lot of dirt where your boots live and they're getting washed a lot and there's a lot of abrasion, can you replace the Velcro safely? Have it taken off by your local tack repair store and new Velcro put on?
Well, I suppose you could, but as an American, I can't seem to find anybody who can repair something as cheaply as I can replace it.
Well, see, right from the manufacturer's mouth, right there you
go.
Right.
That's right, exactly. And then, too, you never know. Is somebody going to do an appropriate job? Are they going to sew and create a rub point? Are they going to sew, not put in stitching that's the way, you know, when we make a boot, we spend years researching how to make that boot and how to make it so that it will not fail. And, you know, a piece of elastic will not break, something will not give. But one of the important things that the customer has to do to make sure a boot or a bell boot doesn't fail is they have to keep their Velcro clean. You know, if you have a little wire brush or even just a hard dandy brush at your barn when you take your boots off, make sure that you brush out the dirt from the Velcro, because if you don't, Velcro doesn't close dirt encased in it.
So Velcro and dirt do not get along.
No, they don't. But they like each other. They like each other.
There we go. Which, of course, brings us to our next and final wrap-up here for a horse's leg care products here. When you take care of your boots, sort of give me boot care 101, because there are things that people do to clean their boots which just don't sound like a good idea.
Well, I would first say only put leather products on leather. We see a lot of people who try to put oils on other materials.
Not a good idea at all.
No, it will destroy that product. So only put leather cleaning products on leather. Most other products can be washed with simple soap and water, just kind of a simple detergent. And then pretty much every manufacturer has a special cleaning agent that you can buy. And sometimes what that does, if you use that cleaning agent, is it will extend your warranty on your product. So that's often a good idea to invest a little bit in that. But generally, just a little soap and water. Some items you can bleach, so you need to check with the manufacturer to make sure that you can add bleach to the wash cycle if you're washing them. And if you're wearing boots, what I do is, you know how you can buy those little net laundry bags, washing machine?
Yeah.
And all products have Velcro. Things tend to want to get stuck on each other, and things get pulled in the washing machine. So you want to put your products maybe in one of those net bags and wash them like that, and generally they're good. And, oh, I forgot one other thing. When you're taking off a boot that has Velcro, make sure that you hold down the bottom Velcro, take off the tab, because if you pull the tab and don't support the underlying Velcro, then what you're doing is decreasing the longevity of your boot, because you're going to be pulling against that elastic and pulling against the mainframe of what supports the boot. So always use two hands when you're taking off a boot and pull up your securing Velcro tab, and then pull your Velcro off.
Oh, very good points. I love that whole mesh bag idea. Yeah, and you can get them very inexpensively at the myriad of dollar stores that are around.
Absolutely. And they'll save you a lot of money just by spending a few pennies on something like
that. Yes, and one of the things that I've learned the hard way is I close the Velcro when I put them in the wash so that the boots don't turn themselves into a little rat's nest of Velcro attached in all the wrong directions.
That's right.
Well, once again, a very informative chat, Elaine. Tell folks where they can find Thin Line on the web and learn more about good quality boots and all the technology that goes into them.
You can find us at thinlineglobal.com.
Thinlineglobal.com. Does Thin Line have a Facebook page?
We do.
So you can search on Facebook for Thin Line, all one word?
Thin Line, all one word, and it's a really fun page, and if you are a Facebook fan, you often get coupons that nobody else gets to see.
Top secret, and you heard it here on the Horse Radio Network. Thin Line Global coupons on the Facebook page. Check it out. Thanks again, Elaine, and we'll see you around.
Great. Thank you. Happy riding.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for listening, everyone, and if you have not yet listened to parts 1, 2, and 3 of this leg protection series, you can find them at horsetipdaily.com. Just type leg protection in the search bar in the top right-hand corner of the page. And you can also find them at thinlineglobal.com. Oh.
Just wanted to reiterate that they have a coupon for our Horse Radio Network listeners. If you go to their website and you order off their website, in the coupon code section when you check out, if you put in the code radio, just the word radio, you will get 12% off your order. So that's for all of the Horse Radio Network listeners, whether you're buying boots or anything else, just put radio in at checkout and you'll get 12% off your order. Well, before we get to our song of the day, I got to tell you, they did a census here recently of adult My Little Pony fans, better known as bronies.
Bronies.
They actually did a census of 20,000 bronies. Now, first of all, the fact that there is 20,000 bronies is disturbing.
Exactly.
The fact that there are 20,000 bronies that are willing to answer a census is doubly disturbing. And this, you want to hear what they found out? Obviously,
so, bronies, yeah. Of course, for those who are behind the times, is a man, a grown man, that is a fan of My Little Pony's Friendship is Magic television show and everything that accompanies the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic television show. I don't know if you've watched it. I've flipped by it, so I had to turn it on, and it is like little My Little Ponies that look like they're streetwalkers. Have you noticed that? The makeup,
the little outfits,
the hair, the little outfits. So anyway, so these are grown men, gay, straight, every sort of in between, that love this show.
Yes, that is correct. Well, here's what they found out in their survey. They average between the age of 15 and 30, with the median coming in at 19 or 20. They are mostly single, big surprise. Nearly one quarter of them are in a relationship, though, apparently. Now, you know, again, this is a survey, so they answered the way they wanted to answer, so who knows whether they're telling the truth. There were 65% of those surveyed were heterosexual, with a little more than 17% indicating that they were gay. The largest number of these fans live in the United States and Canada, so that says a lot for us. And then there are smaller groups in the United Kingdom, Australia, and Germany. According to the survey, 70% of them come from households that have not seen a divorce or separation. And that's compared to 50% on average. So they come from normal, stable households. Those between 18 and 24 are also nearly two-thirds less likely to have failed high school. So
they're educated.
Yes, that's correct. And 70% plan to attend college of some kind. And 5% served in the military. Remember we had that story about the ones that served in the military? They have to get the crap beat out of them every other day.
I don't think that when you're in the military, you don't wear a little button that says, I am a brony. I think you pretty much...
You don't think you put your little stuffed animals on your locker?
No, that's probably in your off time. Awesome. So these are straight. At least 65% of them are straight. And most of them are educated, not coming from broken houses. These are like normal, everyday guys.
I do have a question about this survey. It said over 65% of those surveys were heterosexual, with a little more than 17% considering they were gay. Where is the other part, Paul?
It's a great point.
There's a certain percentage there that's unaccounted for, apparently.
Yeah. I guess maybe those didn't answer.
Why do I just get the willies every time I talk about bronies? I don't know. But.
Because they're grown men that like My Little Pony. That's the whole thing. It doesn't matter what sexual orientation they are. It doesn't matter where they came from. It is the fact that a bunch of grown men enjoy watching My Little Ponies together. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. All power to them. There you go. If you
and
are
guess who's
pony,
going to be watching My Little Ponies here very shortly?
Not this guy. Not this guy.
You're going to have your son watching Power Rangers and cool stuff like that?
I don't really think we have a choice on what they watch. I think that they watch whatever they're going to watch. But I am a huge fan of SpongeBob SquarePants, so I really will support that.
You have every DVD ready for him. He's going to be watching that from the time he can. You can sit him up in his little chair to see the TV set.
Yeah, and a lot of parents don't like SpongeBob SquarePants because they think it's kind of obnoxious and, you know, maybe teaches them bad life lessons. I disagree, and I think My Little Pony is, I'm sorry, SpongeBob SquarePants is molding young minds in a healthy way. So I'm going to
say
that one.
They say that about the Roadrunner, too, that there was too much violence. But that's when cartoons were fun. I mean,
I know. You've
got to be blowing crap up for it to be fun.
I don't think that when you think about violence, I think of, like, these video games that kids have now.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Not,
bring
not
on
the
Roadrunner and Acme and all their shenanigans.
Yeah. I always thought you could buy, when I was a kid watching that when it was on TV, we actually shopped at an Acme, and I was very disappointed every time we'd go that you couldn't buy bombs and, you know, things to blow things up and cannons.
Rockets to attach to your back.
Yes. They didn't sell any of that stuff at Acme. I didn't get it. I figured they had a different Acme store. Well, let's take a break for our song today. We have Love is a Rose from Templeton Thompson. We'll be right back. Hi, Glenn here with the Horse Radio Network, and I am with Debbie from Equestrian Collections with Equestrian Collections Product of the Week.
This week, I'm going to be featuring the Horse Wall Helmet Hook. Now, this sounds like a simple concept, but the first time I saw it, I thought, dang, what a good idea. What this is a little helmet. It's a metal contraption that you actually put in the wall of your tack room, and it's got like the shape of a helmet, and you put the helmet on it in your tack room. I don't know about you, but I've got like three or four different helmets hanging in bags in my tack room, and I have to remember which one is in which bag, and then I have to dip around looking for it, and it takes forever. This, you just put it in the wall, you put your helmet on it. It helps keep it dry because the air is coming through all the time, so if you're wearing your helmet in the summer, you put it on this hook, it dries it out, so you're not going to get any of that gross mold and smell in there, and it keeps them out of the way, and it shows you what helmet you have on your hook so you can pick it up anytime. It's only $8.95, and I saw this thing and thought, I'm going to tell my listeners about this helmet hook.
I love this thing. I you know, helmets always end up in a pile or upside down or backwards. I'm
going to
get a couple. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to get a couple of these and just put them on my wall of my office. I think it'd be cool decoration too because I have several helmets. So
I was just thinking that when you said that, when you go into the equestrian theme restaurants and they have saddles and stuff, wouldn't that be cool? I could sell it to them and they
put
it on their wall.
I love this. Only $8.95 too. The Horace Wall Helmet Hook, you can just look for Helmet Hook on EquestrianCollections.com.
Better not pick. Love is a rose, but you better not pick it. Only grows when it's on the vine. Handful of thorns and you know you missed it. Lose your love when you say the word mine. Mine. Love is a rose. Love is a rose. Love is a rose. Hey, love is a rose.
And that is Love. That was a great song. I was totally getting into that. I don't know if I've heard that one before, Glenn.
Yeah, no, that was off of her new CD. And she, I don't know that we played that one. That might be a new one.
I like it. Love it, Rose Templeton Thompson. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. And in just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Leslie Wiley from HorseNation.com. And Glenn, have you been on Horse Nation recently?
I was looking around there this morning.
Did you see the cutest thing ever, which I actually showed to my husband because I thought it was so cute, and then he thought it was disturbing. And this is not a good sign. If you go to horsenation.com, they actually have, it's on the front page, let's see, about, I'm looking for it right now, close to the bottom. It's called 22 Newborn Babies on Saddles.
No, I missed that. Let me look.
Oh, you've got to click on this. It is like brand new newborn
babies.
All right,
that is disturbing. I'll put your husband on. Oh, that one is really disturbing. Isn't this pornography? They're going to close her site down.
This is the cutest thing ever. Oh, my gosh. It's a 22 newborn babies on saddles. If you go to horsenation.com and you're listening later, just type in babies into the search engine and it's the first thing to pop up.
Well, let's qualify mostly naked newborn babies on saddles. Let's qualify.
They're newborn infants, Glenn. It doesn't matter whether they're naked or not. It's adorable. And so the pictures of them, like just newborn babies sitting, like resting on the cantle of an English saddle or laying against the back of a Western saddle. And the only thing my husband could say is, I really like that Western saddle. I'm like, honey.
I thought the same thing when I saw the one, the Azure Western Saddle says Azure Marie Photography. That one was kind of the.
Chad, like the Ivy Photography one. I don't know what the Azure one.
Oh, it has all the bling on it. Oh no, it's a straight up one. Yeah, that's nice. I like that.
It's not the point. Okay, it's the point that there are some really stinking cute teeny tiny little infant babies that are on these saddles and did these photo shoots. If like one of the last ones on a Western saddle, that is a huge saddle or a really teeny tiny baby. Oh, they're so cute. I'm sorry, I couldn't stand it.
Well, Leslie's here. Why don't you tell her how cute they are?
Hi, Leslie.
Oh my God.
You're making me excited about being a mama and all this. And so I'm like, Chad, look, we got to do a photo shoot with our new baby on a saddle. And he's like, that's disturbing.
Will you please, you have to do a baby on a saddle photo shoot. Like, it makes me want to have a baby just so I can, like, take pictures of it on the saddle.
Thank you. I think it must be a woman thing because when I saw these, I was like, oh, my God. And Chad's like, oh, gross.
I'm kind of with Chad on that one.
Yeah, Glenn agrees with him. Like, that's gross. Where did you find these?
Just, you know, I saw one and a friend of mine, an equine photographer friend, did one of them, the girl who runs Pretty Sweet Photography. And then I sort of started looking around to see if anyone else had staged that kind of photo shoot. And there were lots of photographers that had, and I'm blown away on so many levels. One, by the cuteness. Two, how did they get all of those babies to fall asleep? You know, on like I can see like screaming, crying newborns in saddles, like not as cute, but you know, it seems like that's what they're doing most of the time anyway. So yeah. I'm just impressed. I'm impressed.
It is really, really impressive. They're just stinking adorable. And they all, you're right, they're all curled up totally asleep on these saddles. I would be a little nervous, like the one, that baby that is laying on an English saddle that is actually up on a stool. And I'm like, one false move, little baby, and you'll tumble. But I'm assuming that the handlers are close by.
Yeah, close by. Or I even saw a couple of photographer blogs that sort of showed how they actually did those shoots. And they had several takes with somebody standing behind the saddle or, like, kind of holding the baby on the saddle. And then they just, you know, they can Photoshop out whatever they, you know, they can Photoshop whatever they want these days. So they just Photoshop out, like, the hand, you know. So, yeah. So,
oh, so cute. Well, send me that because I'm going to need to take a picture of my future son on his daddy's Western saddle. So it's going to have to happen.
Oh,
I know. Isn't that the cutest thing you've ever heard? Well, Leslie, I hear you had an exciting weekend. Where were you? Would you go to Pine Top, Southern Pines?
I was at Southern Pines, yep. It was my horse's first intermediate and my first intermediate in a long time. Like,
and I'll qualify for new listeners. That's eventing we're talking about. Leslie's eventing.
Eventing. Yep. So it was my first in probably 4 or 5 years. And, you know, we got through the dressage, which I was super excited about.
Now, let me point out that the intermediate level is one below Rolex, okay? So this is big stuff. This is scary stuff to me. This is, like, stuff I will never do because I like my little training, hopefully going prelim someday. Like, I'm good with that. She's taking she's taking crazy one step further.
I am, and, you know, I wasn't sure how I'd feel when I got there because – you know, like I said, it's been probably 4 or 5 years since I've done intermediate, and, you know, I feel like back then I was dumber, I was, you know, I was younger,
single.
I was less in touch with my mortality, so I wasn't sure how this was going to go. and so I went out and walked my cross-country course. And with Will Faudry, and, you know, he's like, oh, no big deal. By fence three, I was terrified. I was ready to put the horse on the trailer and go back home, which in hindsight I probably should have done. But the first jump was fine. The second jump we shared was a big cable we shared with Advance. The third jump was this gigantic Turkaner that I emailed Glenn a picture of it this morning of me standing down in it, and I look like I've been put in a dryer.
What a Turkaner is. Explain to the audience what picture we're looking at shows.
So a Turkaner is a jump with a ditch underneath it. So in this ditch it was
massive.
You could lose a horse in it.
You were standing in the ditch and your head came up to the bottom of the log that was the jump to the bottom of the log.
It was. So I get through the course walk.
Question. Hold on. Okay. Will Faudry, who, by the way, in the advanced division, I believe, finished first and second, right? So, of course, he's going to be like, oh, this is no big deal. Just ride forward, kick on, you know. What exactly does Will Faudry say to you at this jump? What is his, like, coaching words of wisdom?
You know, Will's kind of funny because he's just like, you know, just sit up and kick, you know. I mean, there's a lot of just instruction to just kick. When in doubt, kick. When even more in doubt, kick harder, you know.
That's annoying.
Keep it moving. Forward momentum, please.
Over it or through it. That's what they say. So, or under it, I guess, in the case of the Turkaner, I can see you could almost go under it. So I get through the course walk, and it is a mighty big course, and I'm feeling fine. Actually, I went back to my trailer and just sat in my trailer and wept for a few moments privately. So then I pull myself together, and I think, okay, I've just got to walk it again. I've got to go get some wine, and I've got to walk it again. So I go and get a big mug of wine and trudge back out there. And I think it's going to look smaller this time, either because it's the wine or perspective. You know, Regardless, it should look smaller. Well, I walked again. It didn't really look any smaller. I walked it another time or two, and then I went and bought some saddle tight, you know, that ski spray you put on your saddle, and I put so much of it on. Actually, this is when I knew things were not going to go my way. On the way to warm up, my breeches sort of got stuck to the, they're so to the saddle, that I actually, like, ripped the crotch out of my breeches. So now I have a gaping hole, like, in my crotch. I'm like, oh, no, this is not boding well. So I head out on the course, and I think my horse and I were both just a little deer in the headlights, you know. This course got real serious and real big real quick. You know, there were no, like, sort of friendly galloping, let's get going fences. And it was our second outing of the year. So we kind of trudged on for a little bit, but I pulled him up before the first water jump because I just didn't think that we were where we needed to be at in our head to keep going. So he was running wild a little bit and like, what the, you know, and I'm doing a terrible job of like steering or stopping. I'm just kind of like, just kick, just, Will just said, just keep kicking, you know, but you have to do a little more than that to get around an intermediate course. So we'll try it again, next month.
So how did it go over fence three, the big chicaner with the giant ditch, which nothing scares me. Like, my fence of choice to hate is a ditch, and then you throw a jump on top of the ditch. No, thank you. I did my first chicaner at Galway, and I was like, oh, my God. Of course, my horse didn't care one bit. But, no, it's the scariest type of fence to me to jump. How did it go for you?
It actually worked really well, but it was a big – the horse didn't actually really see that it was jumping. You know, chicaners are kind of rider scare fences because the horses don't really know. You know, they haven't walked the course. They haven't, like, crawled down, you know, and taken this, you know, like I did in this picture that I took. You know, they haven't – they're sort of focusing on the top of the fence. You know, it's the rider that knows that the fence is, you know, it's 5 feet, the ditch is 5 feet deep, and et cetera, et cetera. So that one actually rode really well. But he does sort of look down into it over the top and landed and was just like, what was that? You know? Just kind of took off. So,
but that's the great thing is that they don't realize what they did until they've already gone past it.
Right. Yeah. So.
Which leads me to the next something on, well, I'm glad you made it safely back to the arms of your husband and he did not have to go visit you in the hospital. And,
right.
You know, there's another day to tackle an intermediate course and next time that your caner is not going to look scary to you. So there you go.
That's right.
Leads me to the next segment on Horse Nation, which I thought was probably one of my favorite things I've ever seen, and apparently 2,000 other people did as well, because it's 5 photos of horses trying to jump out of their skin.
Yes.
This is unbelievable, Leslie. Unbelievable. If you can go to horsenation.com and scroll about 4th or 5th story down, this is some monumental jumping. These horses need to be in Grand Prix. Including the pony.
Yes, our new weekend editor, Jenny Autry, posted that, and I have no idea where she found those photos. But yeah, I was my jaw dropped a little bit, and wow. So allergic to wood, is what they say, right?
Yes,
can we
very
overcompensation? Can we?
Now, like the first one is a gray horse, and actually I know who Sarah Conyers is. She's a little hunter jumper rider in Kentucky, and her horse is literally jumping. Let's see, if that's probably a 2.5 foot fence, you think 2, 3, 4, 5, 24, 30,
yeah, inches, yep.
Yeah. So it's 2.5 foot, and the horse is jumping at least 6.5 feet.
Unbelievable.
Like it's a 6.5-foot jump. And then you go down and see the next one of the pony, who is a pole on the ground. And this poor child is holding on for dear life. But my favorite one by far is the cross-country photo. Glenn, did you see that one?
Yeah, with the legs and the feet out.
The legs and feet are reaching out, and exactly what you described, that's what made me remember this, is what you described when you said that the horse actually looks down at what they're jumping when they're over it in the air. And this is a perfect example of that. And kudos to the rider for having fantastic leg position, probably landed off of this fine. Some of the other ones might be not so much.
Right.
It was fantastic. Nice work. Love that segment.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So aside from all those, because I've been stalking your website, what else is going on?
Let's see. Well, we did a couple of, we're kind of doing a run on unusual or lesser known horse sports this past week. We had one with a bunch of pictures of vaulters in midair, which was just, I think that's terrifying. Maybe because I'm a super klutzy person with no balance, but
vaulting. Run intermediate, yeah, good just... idea.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. See, but she's so, relying on her horse. That's how good her horse.
We had a story on mounted archery, which I did not know existed.
Leslie, mounted archery is becoming very popular now, and it's one of the fastest growing equestrian sports there is today.
That's what I hear.
We did an interview with Katie Stearns, who they call the Flying Duchess, and she is out of the West Coast. She's one of the top mounted archers in the world and has traveled all over the world. She's one of the top teachers in this country. And some of the video of her doing her, I don't know what they call them, her runs or whatever, are just amazing. I mean, they're pulling those arrows. They're firing those arrows. They're loading the bow and everything at a dead run with no hands on the reins at all. It's just amazing.
When one says that they're the best in the world at something and there's only like five people that do it, are all five of those people the best people
in the
world?
No, you know what? I thought about that too. But actually, in the Asian countries, mounted archery is huge. It's a huge sport over there.
Wow.
That's because that's how they eat, like Mongolia.
Yeah.
That's how they get their food.
Wow. Yeah, I'm impressed. I mean, I'm sure I could not hit a bow and arrow. I could not hit anything, you know, with a bow and arrow just standing still, much less moving it a gallop, you know.
The only time I remember doing any sort of archery at all was summer camp when I was probably 13. And I remember putting the arrow into the bow and pulling back, and somehow I only hurt my hand. Like
that'll happen.
Bang right into my hand. And
your forearm gets nailed a lot too.
Exactly. So I gave up archery at an early age. But the post is on horsenation.com, and the vaulting thing is amazing. This is like girls that are in midair up above these horses on purpose.
On purpose.
And doesn't it look like the horse is about to canter away and it's going to be gone by the time they land?
I know, right? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. Well, awesome. Anything else that you want to go over that we need to look at?
Well, you know, one more story that I would really recommend having a look at. We have a writer named Lauren Jackson, who's just over the past year has just up with some, she writes a history column, sort of a horses and history column, and she just digs up the most interesting facts and people, you know, and her most recent profile was last week on Dr. Phyllis Luce, who was the first female vet in the U.S. And sort of she goes through and tells Dr. Luz's story. And, it sounds like just a phenomenal woman and such an inspiration You know, she was galloping racehorses at the track by age 15, and was actually not only was she, you know, a female jockey, but she was got certified and became the youngest racehorse trainer in the country. And then went on and was a esteemed show jumper, and then went to vet school, and actually had opened her own private practice with some funding from film star Grace Kelly, which is kind of wild, and she actually is, you know, still living her horsey lifestyle today. I think she's lives in Florida today, but she's at, I guess, she looks like maybe she is.
Well, it says she relocated to Florida in 1999. She relocated to Florida at the age of 73.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
So she's in her middle to late 80s.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. So what an impressive,
you know,
what an impressive.
I hope she writes a book. You know, I hope she writes a book about all the clients she's seen and all the crazy things she's done. What an amazing woman. What a totally interesting and amazing woman. And if you think about, like, I think 70% of vet students now are women. It
mm-hmm.
just goes to show you, like, she was a pioneer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
That
is an amazing story. I'm reading part of it now, and the life she led. And it wasn't easy for her. She graduated 57 from vet school, and nobody wanted a female vet. So she had a tough time. She had to take all the crazy cases and work for the circus for a while.
Can you imagine? My goodness.
Amazing. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for joining us. And you can find all of these stories on horsenation.com. And I do want you to know that I posted on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page the link to the babies in the saddles and asking people whether they thought it was cute or creepy. And so far, we're at about, well, the horse, because they're all horse people now that are looking at them. One person comments that some of the saddles could use a little saddle cleaning soap. Someone said they looked at the saddles as much as the babies in the saddles and thought they were cute. And then some thought about 50-50 were cute, 50-50 were creepy.
Oh, horse people.
Yeah. Fantastic.
That is funny that you look at that, don't even see the baby and go, oh, nice saddle. Or that one needs clean.
Yeah.
So typical.
And that's the reason that I will not put my baby on one of my saddles. It's because people will go, God, you ever clean that thing?
Oh, I love this last comment. There's one more that just popped in. Way better than the portraits of infants in flower pots. Seriously, flower pots.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It is way better. Good call.
True.
Good call. Well, Leslie, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Have a great week.
All right. We'll see you, Leslie. We're glad you made it through alive.
Me too.
Bye.
Bye.
Those are some big jumps. I was on Eventing Nation looking at that level she was riding over there. Samantha had a bunch of posts of some of the jumps. Those were some big jumps. That's crazy time. Yeah.
I think it was great introducing my husband to Rolex and some of these larger, when we watch my coach ride, and some of these jumps are huge, and then he doesn't worry so much about the jumps I jump. Even though, they're huge. To him, it's like, oh, it's not Rolex.
Yeah.
So training is no big deal.
It's
really
not a 5-foot ditch underneath that log. Well, who cares?
Exactly.
Right.
No big deal.
Yeah.
So it was great.
Well, I know how your husband feels, because when I first met Jennifer, she was competing, and you know, it's probably about the level you are, and I thought they were terrifyingly big until we went to watch Fairhill the one time. It's like, okay, well, now I see what the big ones look like.
Yeah.
So,
and see, if horses can do that, they can definitely do this.
Right, right. Well, we're not concerned about the horses so much as we are our riders, you know. As horse husbands, we're just concerned that you're going to end up broken, and that's something we don't want to see. So.
Well, I think it worked out all right.
Well, let's see here. Do we have any other stories that we can talk about here? They're doing a disturbing thing in New York City. I don't know if you find it disturbing or fun. They have this, apparently they do these art projects in the Grand Central Station, which is the train station there in New York. Big, beautiful station if you've ever been there. It's really cool. But they, apparently they do these art projects. And the art project that's now happening, started yesterday, is called Heard New York. And it's this guy, the Chicago artist by the name of Nick Cave, in collaboration with dancers from the Alley School. It, they put on these huge, what they call sound suits. They semi-resemble horses. They're supposed to resemble horses, but they're called sound suits, and they're costume-like sculptures that make noise as they move to create life-size horses that make horse noises. So one of them is they sound like a field of grain blowing in the wind, and, you know, like the horses would be out there eating and that kind of thing. These things stand about 6 to 8 feet tall, and they're very kind of cartoonish, but they're apparently prancing around and doing their thing in New York. So if you want to see the, if you, I know we have a couple of listeners that actually live in New York. If you want to go see the horse sculptures, let us know. Let us know what they were really like.
Yeah, I don't know. First of all, they don't look much like horses. They kind of look like Snuffleupagus on from.
That is what they look like, actually. That's good.
They kind of have that same appearance to me. Am I wrong?
No, that's pretty much right. Yeah. You're pretty much right. That's right.
But we'll probably, anyway, we should try to post that that picture at least maybe at some point and see. I don't know. I don't know how weird that is.
Well, if any of our listeners in New York go to see it, let us know. Let us know how it was in person. And speaking of eventing, it looks like the British are trying to ease up a bit on the event horses during dressage.
Yeah, I saw that.
I don't know what to make of this. You know, what they're basically saying, from what I read, I don't know if you, what you get out of it, is that they're telling the dressage judges to take into account that event horses are very fit, that are, you know, extremely fit, and that are basically ready to go run for their lives the next day in cross country. And so we just take into account that they're going to be a little high and maybe a little mighty during the dressage test and may not be as soft and supple as other dressage horses. I always thought they took that into account already, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I think it's because they've got the FEI judges that are judging all of these, and they've got these horses that are incredibly fit going around, and what they're trying to do, it seems like to get the scores a little more reasonable. He says, it goes on to say, remember, 10 is only excellent. 10 doesn't have to be utmost perfection. 10 is excellent. If the horse is presented showing good training and a good way of going and does cope with the environment that it is in, it should be rewarded with very high marks. So do you think they're just trying to, this is in Europe, by the way, they're trying to get eventer scores to start looking better?
I think it sounds like they want an ego boost here for eventers,
yeah,
who are tired of seeing,
exactly,
they're tired of seeing the dressage riders get scores that are, you know, approaching perfection. And they're sitting there with their scores that are way low going, you know, we're never going to get to that point. I don't know. Jennifer, you evented for a long time. What do you think?
I agree. It's completely politics and ego boost. They're all fit. Every horse in the competition is fit. Every horse in the competition is judged by the same judge. It doesn't make any difference. You know, first
right,
you dumb down
that,
the test by removing the halt. Now you're going to dumb down the judge. I think it's cool.
Yeah. I think they're trying, and also like some of the big disobediences that they have leaping into the air, all that, they're just trying to get them to not mark those so low, so poorly anyway. So who knows? I mean, I don't know why they would do this, but it seems if you do one horse, you do have to do them all anyway. Every horse is judged by the same judge in each division, so who knows why they're doing it.
So you're right. The only thing it's going to do is increase the relative scores for everybody. So everybody,
yeah,
gets a higher score. So then you're right. It just becomes an ego.
Well, and when you advertise your horse for sale, you could say he got X percentage point on Y test. That's all it's going to do.
Yeah,
true.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, but
well, good. Works
Jamie,
for me then.
I was just going to say, Jamie, I love that.
Give me a better
score. See if I care.
Yeah. I'm tired of getting 36s. I want to get a 30, you know, a 28.
Well, that's it for today, everybody. Don't forget that tomorrow is Tune Tuesday. We'll have another show for you, all the music from horse artists around the country. So that'll be a brand new one for you tomorrow. And then Wednesday is trivia, Wheel of Trivia. We have a lot of great prizes, hundreds of dollars worth of prizes on the Wheel of Trivia. So tune in and give us a call at 347-637-3238 on Wednesday. If you want to hear more about the Live Oak International, the driving radio show, we'll go live this morning where Wendy and I do a recap and we get a couple of interviews in there as well. So you can hear that over at the driving radio show. Well, that's it. We'll see you tomorrow morning, everybody. And then Jamie and Jennifer will be back on Wednesday.
All right. So everybody have a great day. Go ride your horse and spay, neuter, and geld. Oh, I'll have to send you a picture, Glenn. I shaved the Australian Shepherd that we adopted, Joy.
Oh, man. Yeah, I definitely
It's awesome. It is awesome. She's a little embarrassed right now.